There is an interesting book by, I don't know the exact pronunciation. It is A-B-B-E-D-O-U-B-O-U-I-S.
Oh, Dubois.
Abe Dubois.
I have that book. I have that book.
Hindu Manners
and Customs. Yeah, I have that book, thick book.
That gives in a very elaborate way.
Yeah, I have that.
The customs and traditions followed by...
It's a very slanted view, of course. He's a very bigoted...
Abdu'l-Bahá. But...
Very bigoted.
He could write as much as he could gather. But even beyond that, there are so many things.
Yeah, he didn't have the feel for it, though. He had the eye, but not the feel.
For example, the people from Orissa. Anything I can help?
No.
The people from Orissa. Thank you very much. People are...
Gujarat.
I was born in, you see, in amongst the different people all over India, Hindus and Muslims mainly, Parsis to some extent, Christians, I don't know. A lady who is in the family way is ceremoniously sent to her father's place for delivery.
Ceremoniously means there's some function?
Yeah.
With honor and honor.
No. They hold a ceremony in which the Brahmin predominates. Then in her sari, some rice, a coconut and other cereals are added, then red vermilion on the hands, garlands of flower. And
she's garlanded around the neck with flowers?
And a specially prepared of silk and jerry. Raksha.
Raksha Bandhan.
But not Raksha as we use it on the Raksha Bandhan day. This is specially prepared. And the Brahmin sometimes in some communities, he puts it into the puja place. And then she goes.
This is tied around her wrist, this raksha.
For her raksha, because she has to deliver child.
This will be what, after 7 months?
This is known as a simanta.
Simanta.
Now, I will write the word in English first. S S I M A N T. Simanta.
Yes, I'm familiar with this.
Now, what is simanta? Simant ultimately means Sima, that is the border. Anta means end. She had to tie her hair like this so that she loses her attraction and hence...
You mean the parting is gone?
No, like this so that her original natural appearance is slightly changed.
You mean this in the middle? This
No. The whole of it. The whole hair is to be tied.
Back. To be tied back.
Tied
not,
back.
Not sideways.
No, here. Back. That is known as simanta. Simanta.
This means that this parting...
No parting.
That's gone.
No, parting is gone. It's a total tying of the hair. So that she changes in her appearance and hence there is no possibility of her husband or herself feeling erotic. Intercourse was to be avoided.
After how many months of pregnancy was this?
It depended upon the caste.
The caste.
In my family, it was the 7th month. She was ceremoniously sent to her father's place. So my mother was sent to her father's place, that is my grandfather's place, mother's father's place, where the delivery would take place. Not here. And it's not in the house of the husband. I'm talking about the custom. Subsequently, we didn't follow it because we were a bit more advanced. So I was born in a place called Palej, near, on the way to Broch, a village where there are 80% Muslims, and the remaining 20 included more than 75% Jains, all migrated from North Gujarat, Palanpur, Mehsana, Radhanpur. So I was born in Palej, that is, in the house of my mother's father. And there being no hospital, the delivery was performed by the traditional, there is a word called Dayan. And usually she was a barber.
Barber's wife. Those days, everyone was born at home, not in the hospitals.
No.
There was no question of being born in the hospital.
Very, very rarely, only Parsi and Christians would go. Or if there is some complication.
Yeah.
So I was born in Palej, in the house of my mother's father, because my mother had to go to her father's place for the purpose of delivery in the 7th month. That is the first significant thing from the point of view of custom. And in the 3rd or the 5th month, the lady is given a ceremonious well off.
Return. Oh.
The return, but well off. Means there is a ceremony performed.
3rd or 5th month after delivery.
After 3 or 5.
After delivery.
After delivery.
So that means that the father wouldn't see he would go to see the child?
Yeah.
But he wouldn't, yeah.
No, he would. But not touch up to 27 days. And there are castes even today, like the Thakkars, Patidars and others. And if a daughter was born, it was looked upon as a bit derogatory. The birth of a son was celebrated. So
I think many castes they used to feel, everyone practically used to feel, a son is born is
even today, as I told you. So of course, in between, if there is a son, then the elders of the husband's family would go to fondle the child, pay him 2 rupees or 5 rupees, some sugar, and there was a ceremonious dinner also, lunch, lunch but not dinner. And then she would be given a send-off. So I was born in my mother's father's house.
Which year was this?
1926, June 20th.
And you're from a Jain family?
But no, but my mother was a Vaishnava.
I see, yeah, right.
So in our community, marriages between Jains and Vaishnavas were quite free.
Quite common. But
within the circle of the caste.
Right, yeah.
Irrespective of the religion.
So the caste that transcended Hinduism, Jainism, that means that the Jains, they were culturally, they were very, very close to the Hindus.
Yes, but 90% of the Jains would marry Jains, and 90% would do.
But still customs, in terms of customs and traditions, very, very similar.
Very similar, similar to some extent. The Vaishnavas have a very low opinion about the Jains, because they think that the Jains are atheists, which is not so. That the world is created and conducted by God is an inherent belief amongst the Vaishnavas. And the Jains have some different meaning. Anyway, so my mother being a Vaishnava, and my father being a Jain, my mother had to adopt the religion followed in her husband's, that is in my father's family.
If a Jain girl married a Vaishnava man, she would become a Vaishnava.
Vaishnava.
Yeah.
Follow the religion of her husband's family. So mine was a Jain family, and my father's father and his family were very active in the maintenance of the temple. They were the persons in charge of the temple. You know, among the Jains, temples do not belong to the guru or the sadhu. It belongs to the sangha. And the sangha amongst the Jains is chaturvid. Chaturvid means fourfold. Shravak, that is the male Jain. Shravika, that is the female Jain. Sadhu, that is the male monk. And sadhvi, the nun. All the four are equal. So it belongs to the sangha. Among the Hindus, even today, the temple belongs to the particular sadhu concerned. For example, there is a Vaishnav Haveli nearby your temple in the Urmi society. That belongs to the Maharaj of Kankroli. That is a temple of Pushtimarga Vaishnava. So, again coming to my life, I had to adopt Jainism as soon as I was brought to Baroda. As my mother told me, I was taken to the temple nearby, and I had to study the Jain literature, the Jain forms of prayer. In my mother's father's family, which was a very staunch Vaishnav family, there were very queer customs. We had to take our meals both the morning meal and the evening meal in a plate of bronze. And if by chance a non-Hindu happens to come nearby, then my grandmother would get up and create a curtain so that his shadow would not contaminate the bronze plate in which I am dining. This is what I have seen 70 years back. Then here in Baroda.
So you were brought up then with two customs?
No.
Jain and Vaishnava?
No, only mainly Jain.
Uh-huh,
but earlier, when I lived with my mother's father, I saw them observing the Vaishnava customs.
Sometimes in your childhood you would go there.
But there was no force. I did visit the Jain temple when I was a schoolboy.
Mm-hmm.
But in Baroda, but because my mother belonged to a Vaishnava family, and my father being not an orthodox and strict Jain, he permitted my mother and hence the children to go to any temple.
In those days, the Hindus, and they were quite strict. They would only go to certain, they wouldn't go to all the temples.
No. To the extent that even today, the person following Vaishnavism, that is one going to that Haveli,
pushed him out,
would not go to a Shiva temple. And in those days, 60 years back, the word Shiva would not be used even unknowingly. You know, stitching of clothes is in Gujarati kapada shivadava. Shiva, the word Shiva comes. That is not to be uttered. So they would say kapada banavadava, tayar karava. Shivadava, no, because it contained the word Shiva.
They were so strict. Yeah.
So they were very strict that a Vaishnava would not go, Pushtimarg, he would not go to a Shiva temple. And not at all to a Jain temple, no. If two friends are moving together and in between comes a Jain temple, the Jain may go inside, the Muslim friend, the Hindu friend would stand outside and await him. He would not enter the Jain temple.
Strong feelings were there, but at the same time, you could be, Hindus and Jains could be friends, but religiously they wouldn't cross.
No. Hindus, Jains, Muslims, Parsis, Christians, they can be friends. But if a Muslim visited the house of a Hindu, then he was given water or everything in a separate glass.
That wouldn't be used for everyone else. Now, in those days, pretty much everyone was religious, wasn't it? Even just like the merchants, when they would open their shop, first they would do a little puja, they would read something.
Even today they are doing.
Yeah, they would read from Gopal Sahasranam.
Even today.
Yeah, to some extent.
And no, not to some extent, to a large extent. And therefore...
But you won't see nowadays people sitting in their shop for half an hour reading this Gopal Sahasranam or something like that. Before you used to see
it. No, but in every shop you will find it. There is a small niche.
Yes, there is that.
Now, amongst the Jains or the non-Jains, whenever they closed the shop in the evening, they would not use the word closed. Band kiya. No. There is a different word. A different Sanskrit word. That the shop... I have closed the shop.
It's inauspicious.
Not inauspicious. So, both the Hindus and Jains, they followed these customs. So far as overall Indian customs, Hindu and Jain customs were concerned.
And some of the most interesting things you were telling me was, you're telling me like the structure of the house was such, so that there was separation between the sexes.
Yeah.
And how women were very polite, and they were very, much separated from the men, and especially to the elders, the father in the family, grandfather.
She had to draw a veil.
Mm.
Usual, but if there is a father-in-law,
if he would come, if they came into the presence of the
like this
father-in-law, they'd have to cover their face with the veil of their son.
And from between the flimsy cloth, she would be able to see, but she would not be able to talk directly. And if the father-in-law is sitting, the daughter-in-law will not face him directly, would not sit on a chair in his presence.
Would remain standing or sit on the floor.
Generally they wouldn't remain standing, not sit down.
Generally they wouldn't come in the presence anyway.
No, supposing some great man like you has arrived and he orders to bring a glass of water or tea, she is allowed to enter, but only when he calls, not otherwise. And that too with a long veil, covering the head and the face.
And you were saying that the house was set up so that there was a
separate passage.
A separate passage, yeah.
The woman would enter the house in such a way that she has not to cross a room where the male elders of the family are sitting.
Male elders would sit in a room, and the veranda would go at the side of the room, so that the women moving in the house, they wouldn't have to enter that room.
I will show you the house that I constructed in 54, in which this 54, in which this particular custom was followed. I'll show you the one that was constructed by me in 54. This was constructed in 27. So that separation, and also at the time of the mills, the women had to take their food after the mills have completed. They don't sit together for eating now as they do on a table. In those days, the women had to take their meals after the total completion of food taking by the males. I have seen this in my family.
I remember you were telling me sometimes if the daughter-in-law had to speak, there was some conversation or something, it was necessary, the father-in-law would speak to her, then she would sit just behind the door of the room. You're telling me that?
Shripad has come. How do you want me to serve him? Then, so you do this, you bring a cup of tea or you bring some sharbat. She would not go direct and serve.
If she had to say something, then from behind the door.
Father-in-law, or somebody has come, what I should do? No. She was called and she had to remain invisible.
From behind the door would be open, but from outside the room, standing behind the door, she would speak in a soft voice.
Very soft voice.
Yeah, and then ask questions.
Not ask questions.
She'd be told.
Hear orders.
Then there's something else, you know, I was asking you, because I asked you very frankly, because you're a psychiatrist and everything, you know, about the workings of the human mind, you're accustomed to. So I was asking about attitude towards sex, and because it was a taboo subject, not something to be talked about openly, but still it was there.
Yeah.
So you were telling how young men, how they would discuss about this, not publicly.
No, not publicly. Mm. Not only that, but any sex literature coming to the house was secluded by the elders, and it was kept away from the younger generation.
There were such things?
Hmm? Yeah.
There were such things? Hmm. Yeah. But no one should know about that, though. That was secret. Secretly, such things were coming up.
As far as possible, they would not like their youngsters to...
What do you mean by sex literature, exactly?
Sex literature? Sex literature is sold in dozens on the footpath near Lahiripura and Mangal Bazar and all.
At that time?
Even now today.
Mm. What is it? Some kind of...
Performance of sex, then different methods of sex, and all obscene things.
At that time it was sold openly.
Even today it...
But at that time society was supposed to be more conservative.
But even today it is sold
in the same place.
And
the
younger generation goes and purchases some cheap literature. Even today.
Mm.
Cheap in the sense that unscientific interpretation.
Mm.
Of course, the classical writing on sex was by Vatsyayan, Kama Sutra.
Mm.
But among the younger generation, hardly 1% was aware of Kama Sutra.
Mm.
Hardly 1%.
Now, you're saying like the young men, they secretly or among themselves only, they may discuss about this.
Only among themselves they would talk. But even then, unscientific, because very few people were aware of the classical, traditional treatises on sex, like Kama Sutra of Vatsyayan. They would read some cheaper books and erotic descriptions.
One thing you told me last time was that sometimes the husband would beat the wife.
Yeah.
That was quite common.
Many times, not sometimes.
That was quite common, actually.
Mm, quite common.
It's severely sometimes they'd be beaten also?
Mm.
Severely they would beat them?
Really?
Severely?
No, it depends upon the exchange of arguments. If the woman tries to defy, then she was given a good thrashing by the husband.
Mm-hmm. And that was quite accepted in
society. It was accepted.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Nowadays there's a lot of protest against this.
There is. But and to the extent that if we hear now that a man beats his wife, it's derogatory now.
Mm. But actually we see in those days actually that the family seemed to be much more stable.
Yeah, very stable.
Mm. There was no divorce?
No, very rarely. And families were joint families.
Mm.
That is the father, three or four sons.
Mm.
You know, there was no restriction on having children. In those days, there was no family planning. So three to four sons, their wives, their children, all of them lived together, shared everything together, dined, and it was a joint family. Earning also was jointly divided and distributed.
Right. Now, what are you've seen old India and modern India, and you're a psychiatrist also, you advise so many people. What are your views on this? Because you're saying that traditionally that women were very submissive and they were very much kept under control.
No.
At the same time, the family units
under the thumb.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. At the same time, the family units seem to be much more stable, and traditional women actually they seem to be much more happy.
No.
Than the modern so-called liberated woman.
I mean,
would you like to comment on that?
Hazif, abiding by the traditions of the family, was respected in the society.
Yeah, it was required. A woman who didn't follow, or anyone who didn't follow that, was considered abominable.
No. The unity in a joint family was appreciated. They didn't make any differentiation or discrimination between the children of one brother and the children of the other brother.
Right.
In those days.
Right. Yeah.
In my family, for instance, my brother's children came to know about the name of their father at the age of 12, when they had to fill in a form in the school. Till then, nobody knew who their father was.
Oh, they didn't know who their actual father was?
No, because
they had so many fathers.
The whole care was taken by me.
Uh-huh.
Education, then sickness and all that. That was the area in which everything was entrusted to me.
As the head of the family?
By the head of the family, yeah.
You were the head of the family?
No, my father.
But as the elder brother?
My father and my elder brother, they all entrusted their children and our children to me and my wife.
Mm-hmm.
So, their education, their dress, their going to school, their sickness, everything was looked after by.
So you were like the father?
Hmm. To the extent, of course, with an exception.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know up to the age of 12 when they had to fill in a form and write the name of the father.
Mm-hmm.
Then they asked me what they should write. Then I told them that he is your father.
But you were living in the same house?
Yeah, you were same house.
But your father didn't take care of it?
No, everything was entrusted to me.
Why was that?
Because both of them were professionals, advocates.
I see. They were busy.
And I being in the teaching profession, they entrusted everything to me. And medically also, I knew quite a lot of things in those days. So, wherever there was any sickness or anything, and they would, even for delivery, the women were to be taken to the hospital by me. Because it was a joint family.
That means you're talking about your own brothers.
Hmm?
You're talking about your own brothers.
My own brother, yeah.
So they must have been quite...
I had only one brother.
Oh.
Others had previously expired.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother's children, they were all entrusted to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife and I looked after their day-to-day living, education, health, and everything.
I'd like to get back to this subject again. This you're saying, women were under the thumb.
Hmm.
But at the same time, they appeared to be much more happy. Family life was much more stable.
By all means, it was more happy and more stable, less divorces.
Now, in the modern age, women are asking for equal rights and liberation, equal opportunities.
Hmm.
This doesn't seem... On the surface, this appears to be a fair demand. But in actual fact, we see that society is becoming chaotic due to the breakdown of the family.
Hmm.
Would you like to comment more about this?
Yes. It is becoming chaotic because the central authority, which was an abstract tradition of the family, abstract, not one man, but the abstract tradition of the family.
What do you mean by that exactly?
That the daughter-in-law had to abide by the customs of the family, that she had to observe the instructions of the elders of the family, that they had to pay respect to the guests and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
These were abstract. Concretely also, the father-in-law in person or the brother-in-law in person were respected.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the control of the traditional dikta. Dikta, I hope you understand the word. Traditional dikta.
Yeah,
plural of, plural of dictum.
Yeah.
The traditional dikta are not much cared for.
Mm-hmm.
I went out just now and told my daughter-in-law, please keep a bit slow in speaking.
Mm-hmm.
They are recording. I mean, now it's possible. And she said, "You, I'm so sorry, I forgot to remember."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now the mode of interaction has changed.
Mm-hmm.
Formerly, the daughter-in-law would not dare to enter that area, knowing that her father-in-law is doing something very important.
Mm-hmm. Now, they don't consent.
All these old dikta are tolerated.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back. Let's try and work on this point a little more. That modern women think they'll be more happy if they have equal rights in business and opportunities in jobs, and they shouldn't be dictated to. And it appears on the surface to be a fair demand. But on the other, but let me say that women previously, they were kept under control. If they went out of control, even they were beaten. But still you're saying that they were more happy in those days.
Hmm.
How is that?
Because every family followed the traditions handed over from generation to generation. And hence, they being equal in all the families, the society functioned according to more or less identical customs and traditions.
Mm.
And now, these are violated. The daughter-in-law, in those days, going out to meet someone who was her relative, would take the permission of the mother-in-law that I have to visit my father's sister who has come to the city. She is not well. May I go? Yes, yes, you do go. And now, if the daughter-in-law is going out even for meeting or to a hotel or for consuming ice cream and everything, I mean, they would not ask any elder of the family in their own, where are you going? We are going out. That's all. Formerly, even to go to see a cinema was considered to be a taboo in the family. I and my wife, suppose we want to go to see a cinema, we had to put the word before our mother around 4 p.m. if we wanted to go at 9. Say, today there is a good picture, some of our friends are also visiting that film, shall we go? Yes, you go. And you take the keys of the house with you, so that at night when you come around 1 a.m.
So late it would go.
You are not to knock. You take the keys with you.
Mm-hmm.
And don't disturb our sleep.
Mm. Even when you were older, you were married, you had to take permission.
Hmm?
Even you were married, you had to take permission.
We had to take permission, yes.
Mm.
We had to obtain the permission. It was very casual. But suppose, I'll give an instance. That today is Chaturdashi. Tomorrow is Amavasya. Day after tomorrow is the first of the month of Posh, according to the Vikram Samvat. if some ceremony is to be held early in the morning on the first of Poush and say around 6 a.m. and we say you are going to see a picture and will be returning at once, no, you don't go. You have to get up early in the morning tomorrow. We have got a ceremony in the house, so don't go tonight. Go tomorrow night. That was the usual restriction imposed on the couple. I mean, but this was done in a very casual way. I mean, there was no authoritarian order or like that.
In your home, but in the other homes it may be.
No, in most of the Indian homes.
That was generally like that. Yeah.
Generally, I mean, the parents would understand that now almost all young men and women in all families visit a cinema house. So they will connive at it. But if it becomes frequent, say more than 2 times a month, then they would object. I said, you visited a cinema film 15 days back and we are again going. This much frequent seeing cinema, no. Don't go. And
that was it.
And defiance was considered to be very severely by the parents. You couldn't defy. I'm talking of something 60 years back.
Nowadays parents don't even try to keep.
Now if they want to visit the cinema or the drama or anything, they may not even tell their mother, we are going out, they will come, we are not going to take our meals in the evening and we'll be returning at our own convenience. So why it has become chaotic? Because these were the traditional abstract dicta followed by all the families. So the symphony worked in harmony. And now that harmony is broken. Everything worked in harmony. And now, of course, the traditional torture of the daughter-in-law by the mother-in-law was a common thing, that she had to grind pulses and corn.
They made them work hard. They make them work.
They made them work hard. In the afternoon, they couldn't sleep. No sleep in the afternoon.
Even in the heat.
If a hazif, young, newly married girl, tries to sleep in the afternoon, it was looked upon very derogatory by the mother-in-law. My daughter-in-law is sleeping in the afternoon. No, she could not sleep. My wife couldn't sleep in the afternoon. No.
Why was there such pressure on the new daughter-in-law to bring her into life?
No. I mean, they had to be busy with the household work. No rest. They had to be busy. Rest only after the meals are over.
At night.
At night and the kitchens are cleaned. Then you can have your own separate activity. Not in the afternoon.
So there's a lot of pressure on the newly married girl.
Newly or even old. I mean, even if my wife had 3 children, so far as the work of the house was concerned, it was a must. That in the afternoon this, in the morning you have to run the grinding mill.
From early morning till late at night they would be busy.
Keeping busy, doing work right from morning till night.
That was required of women.
And in that, some mothers-in-law were more strict, using sometimes derogatory words also, that you might have been very free in your father's house. Here, no. This is your in-law's house. Every girl, right since she was 7 or 8, in the family, the parents would say, oh, ultimately the girl has to go as a hazif. So she has to be prepared.
Hazif means
the housewife.
Uh-huh.
She has to go to her in-law's house after getting matured and married. Therefore, right since her school days, she had to be trained up in such a way that when she goes to her in-law's family, she is competent enough to abide by the rules, regulations and orders of the in-laws. And if they didn't, then the mother-in-law would pass sarcastic remarks. Is this the culture that is given to you by your father and mother? Is this the way in which you are asked to behave? What did your mother teach you? Your mother didn't teach you this much even. You don't know how to prepare this food or that food. That torture by passing derogatory remarks was a common thing.
So the
cover her head. By will in the presence of the elders.
Does anyone keep this up hardly now? In the towns, no one is following these things anymore.
No.
In the villages still.
Yes. In the villages, and that too among the Orthodox Brahmin families. Even today. These were known as Pitambar. They had to wear a Pitambar. There is the Brahmin women also used to wear a silken sari, and the males would wear a silken dhoti while taking their meals. Now, of course, the times have changed, and we sit together to take our meals at a table. Remember, one of the women are working. They are working women going to a bank or an office and all. So the times have changed now. But formerly, the daughter-in-law was not allowed to work outside.
There was a disgrace in the family.
No, there was a very great restriction. But then, as you know, the economic conditions of the families were not so affluent, and hence the father-in-law and the mother-in-law and everybody tolerated that after all she brings 1,000 or 1,500 rupees per month and gives it to the family. She is an earning member of the family, so they would tolerate. They would tolerate because it was economically advantageous. Not otherwise.
Not culturally advantageous.
No. No. So even today, among the Brahmin families, if the daughter-in-law is serving in a bank, and when talks are going on for a marriage between a family son and the family daughter who is serving, the father's, the husband's father's family would say, well, when you come to our house, we won't allow you to serve.
And then they may refuse to go.
Of course, as I told you, these things are changing, but they are still there. They are still there. They are not totally abrogated. So, I may add one thing here as a corollary, that all these things were observed and are observed in greater to a lesser intensity depending upon the caste and the province. Bengal, very strict. Andhra, equally strict. Tamil Nadu, equally strict. Kerala, not so much. Gujarat, strict. Saurashtra, stricter. Madhya Pradesh, stricter.
But now central, this Gujarat, this Ahmedabad, this Baroda, it's no. All broken down.
These things have changed now.
Those days they were strict. All of them they were strict.
Now they have changed on account of whether to the economic advantage and also
so many different factors.
And education also.
Education, TV now.
Because she is educated, suppose as a daughter-in-law has obtained her postgraduate degree, then naturally she will be respected by the members of the family, that she is after all an MA or an MSc. So that much.
Then she won't want to cook chapatis or feed the child. Then she doesn't want to cook chapatis or feed the child.
No.
Because she's proud. I have an MSc. It doesn't help you to bring up the children.
No. And then indoor is pregnancy or respected and accepted as a very auspicious thing. And after the campaign for family planning, now the elders also are accepting family. I'm talking of the Hindus only, not the Muslims. Muslims do not accept family planning. So, if a woman had 6 or 7 children in those days, it was praised. If a woman is not capable of being pregnant within the first 1 year and a half, then she will be looked upon with suspicion that she is something, there is something wrong with her, that she is not a perfect woman, that she is not able to bear a child. And then there were derogatory words. The word barren is the English word, but the vernacular is a very derogatory word. Common in Gujarat and Uttar Pradesh. And to extend that, if a woman who is barren for 5 to 6 years after marriage, her woman is also considered to be harmful.
Just to see her, you mean?
Suppose I want to go out for some auspicious work, and if a barren woman comes on in front of me, then my parents will prevent me from going. So don't go. That barren woman is coming. That was the outlook in those days. That even today, if there is no child after 1, 2, or 2.5 years, then people begin to talk that after marriage, 2 years have passed, she has not conceived. There is something wrong with her.
Even today. Means bad karma or something like that. Means that she's in some bad karma.
Bad karma or some such thing. That she's not. And the parents would be worried, would ask the husband and the daughter-in-law to go to a gynecologist or to an obstetrician to get checked up. to why she is barren. And being barren, her whole life was considered to be very derogatory for a woman. She is considered even now. She is despised.
There are many, it's increasing now.
Many. Of course, if they are using some family planning implements. Okay, now shall we stop here?
All right.
Because on every Wednesday, a friend of mine who is a renowned plastic surgeon.
I met him at Nene's house.
And others. We on every Wednesday night we meet. And a friend of mine from America wants to visit he is a hypnotherapist and he is very keenly interested in studying the body-mind relationship, that is the effect of mind on the body. If you read...
Which is your society?
Medical Hypnosis Society.
I see.
You see, the word body-mind is one. It's not separated. Body-mind is taken as a unity. What Descartes in those days propounded. So we have to talk about this. We had written a letter to him and he wants us to come to India and study yoga. He is that man, the younger one.
Which I fancy?
The younger one. Ernest Sarozi. You can bring it down. Milton Erickson from Arizona and he from California. They were teacher and student. And I kept the photograph. Would you please put it back? Because after reading one of his books, I was so much impressed about his candid confessions about his own psychic factors affecting his body. The previous correspondence.
Yeah.
So today we want to discuss this, how to arrange about his... of course...
He's elderly now.
Yeah?
He's elderly now.
No, no, younger to me. He's younger to me. But I am a bit skeptic because the medical profession in India is highly mechanical. They never think of the mental factor in illness. They look upon everything from the point of view of the equation. Symptom X.
Yeah, they're behind the times. In the West, they're already much more progressed into this area.
Here, symptom X, drug Y.
Yeah, yeah.
Symptom Z, drug W.
Symptomatic treatment.
Yeah. But
in the Western world, they're already
only the homeopaths. Homeopathy tries to bring in the mental factor.
Ayurveda also.
Ayurveda also, yes. But more the most the homeopaths.
I see.
So we have to discuss about this. I'm skeptic. The doctors in Baroda are the most backward community.
They think themselves the most advanced.
Most backward community. And I made a survey in India by writing to 50 medical college libraries about a subject that I am very keenly interested in and am studying, psycho-neuro him, you know, Lord Ji.
That's quite a big word. Well, the whole question of psycho and neuro, that's a big discussion in itself.
Yes, it is possible to change even the genes now.
By?
By the mental force.
By suggestion.
By suggestions or meditation also.
But what I'm saying, a big discussion is that neurologists, they don't like psychology.
Yeah. But they have to consult psychologists for sometimes. Because they don't know the drugs given by the psychiatrist.
They're mechanistic.
So, I am skeptic. My friends are very enthusiastic. I'm skeptic to the extent that hardly 5 doctors will attend this lecture.
In this part of
In Baroda. They're backward people. Not so in Europe.
No, in the West he'd get more.
No, I,
you know where he'd get good response? You must know is in Australia.
I received from Poland and Denmark articles translated into English on the role of the mind in the organic disease, psychosomatic problems.
Psychosymptomatic, yeah, that's accepted in...
But not in India.
It may be coming in now, because one of my friends, he's also one of our ISKCON members, he's a doctor in Manipal. So he's just recently qualified. So, I mean, he's very much aware of psychosymptomatic disorders. It is taught now.
There are some stray people, but as a whole, the medical professionals in all over India, they are immune from the mental factor. They never think about the mental factor.
But that's very much part of science, of medicine in the West. For instance, the effect of stress is very much considered in heart disorders.
One of the most effective factors in cardiac problems.
Yeah, it's exactly.
And even in malignancy.
And certainly in
what I was telling you was that we have to discuss about this and to decide. I am very skeptic, though I have written a letter to him to come over here, but I am very skeptic because...
Well, you should tell him then.
I am going to tell him
that
you are very optimistic, or I may be very pessimistic, but reality will prove that I am not wrong. So we have to go there and we'll meet some other time.
Okay. You're on email or he's writing? He's writing to you by email?
What is the email I want to know?
Email is mail which is sent electronically through phone lines connected to computers.
No. He wrote by the air mail.
I see.
Because one of my colleagues, she wrote to me to contact her by email, and I didn't know the meaning of the word email.
The students in the universities, they know. It's in your computer, you write a letter, you have a special device which connects your computer to a phone line.
Yeah, that I have heard about, but not seen.
Yeah, we use it all the time.
No,
although in India it's not so effective.
So we meet some other time.
All right.
You have got my telephone number.
Yes, I have.
I have got your telephone number, both the numbers given to me by the same rickshawala, if you remember.
Ramesh Bhai, yes, I asked him.
I don't know his name, but I could make out from his face because he was all the while trying to push the button for the horn to remind you that it is late now.
Right. Do you need dropping off someplace? We have a car here. Do you want dropping off?
No. No. Uh-huh. I'll be going there at 9.
I see.
And because I've got a denture, I take some time now. I have got a denture now.